Now, after months of hearings, I'm stood outside the court, having just listened to Coroner Catherine Wood deliver her findings. In her conclusion, she found that Paloma's death, quote, could have and should have been avoided. She said that Paloma died of a brain injury caused by the cardiac arrest she suffered at home as a result of her untreated non-Hodgkin lymphoma, a cancer that she said was not only treatable, but in Paloma's case, should have been curable, making her death unnatural. The coroner was highly critical of Paloma's mother, Kate Shemarani, whose behaviour she called incomprehensible on several occasions. She said that, while she accepted that Paloma did have capacity to make her own decisions, that she was, quote, an exceptionally vulnerable young woman from December of 2023, and she questioned her ability to make an informed decision because she was, quote, highly influenced by others, including some of the alternative practitioners who advised and saw her, as well as her mum and dad. She said that this influence contributed more than minimally to Paloma's death. The coroner also considered, but stopped short of, ruling the death as an unlawful killing by Mrs. Shemarani, because while she recognised Kate Shemarani had clearly taken control over events and acted beyond a mother's duties, and in doing so, failed to meet the duty of care, she said that Paloma was not just adversely influenced by Kate Shemarani alone, and that unpicking the influence around Paloma would be impossible. The most striking of all was how the coroner underlined that, had Paloma not been influenced and misinformed, had she been properly advised and supported, she had no doubt that she would have chosen to live, to have chemotherapy. That is a stark admission about the very real impact misinformation can have, especially at a time when someone is fearful and making important life decisions. I found watching the coroner deliver her verdict tough. Paloma's brothers, Gabriel and Sebastian, were visibly frustrated, and speaking afterwards, told me that they felt that their mum had been allowed to get away with influencing and ultimately contributing to their sister's death because of her beliefs and behaviour. Kate Shemarani has repeatedly denied this. They fear others affected by anti-medicine conspiracy theories aren't protected. I asked Gabriel whether the inquest has brought him what he needed.
I feel like, you know, I think as a brother, like, an inquest of this kind can, like, never be enough about them, because my sister has so much more to her than the manner that she died in. Like, she was incredibly intelligent. She was, you know, she was funny, but, you know, she was embarrassing at the same time, but, like, you know, she was goofy. And, like, there's so much more to her as a person. Does it focus on how she died enough? I think the coroner, to the best of their ability, has tried to keep it, like, focused on that. And then my parents, to the best of their ability, have tried to sort of, like, change the discussion away.
The inquest has laid bare the inner workings of a family fractured by conspiracy theories. It's offered some very personal answers for Paloma's brothers and friends, and filled in some gaps for those who loved her, but couldn't see her in her final weeks and days. It's also started to answer the wider questions. How can we protect people from being misled by misinformation when they're unwell, especially when their parent or family member believes and shares conspiracy theories? It's complex, and it feels like we're still in a diagnostic phase, identifying the weak points in our social systems. Paloma's death feels like a turning point, opening more people's eyes to the dangers these ideas pose, and how society is not yet equipped to stop it happening again. Anti-medicine conspiracy theories can contribute to someone losing their life, and ultimately undermine how the systems designed to protect us work, even when they're not perfect. I ask Gabriel, now that the inquest is over, how will he remember Paloma?
I don't really know. I'm figuring it out, because I feel like the thing for me is, like, when you grow up as a twin, you never relate to yourself as, like, as one person. You come as a pair, so you're, like, your identity, your ego is tied to them. I'm on my own in the sense that, like, I haven't been before. I mean, the stuff that I try to do to, like, bring her to life, I'll listen to music that, like, makes me think of her, or music that, like, it wouldn't even be necessarily be songs that we listen to together. It would just, like, evoke a feeling of Paloma to me. But, like, Use Somebody by Kings of Leon, it always makes me think of her. And I guess for me, it's, like, I guess the way my life's going, I'll try to sort of shape my life around my sister. It's important that, like, I take the opportunities that are in front of me, but also, like, sees the life that she didn't get to have. And, you know, I said that at her funeral, like, you know, I've got to live a double life now, so that, you know, when I do see her again, I can, you know, I can give her back the life that was taken from her. I guess that's my only, the way I have to remember her is by, like, you know, living my life the fullest I can, and, you know, doing whatever I can to sort of, like, appreciate every day as it comes.
Hello, I'm Amol Rajan, and from BBC Radio 4, this is Radical. We are living through one of those hinge moments in history when all the old certainties crumble and a new world struggles to be born. So the idea behind this podcast is to help you navigate it.
What's really changed is the volume of information. That has exploded.
And also by offering a safe space for the radical ideas that our future demands.
Go to the Chancellor and say, radically cut the taxes of those with children.
Telling our stories is powerful and a radical act.
Listen to Radical with Amol Rajan on BBC Sounds.